With that, I will just let Bessie give us some introductions.
All right. Everyone's busy, and we agree this is important. We're glad that you're here to come to learn more about it and hopefully stay involved. So thank you. And second, I just want to mention that, you know, when I do get a little vacation, this is where I come. I have two little children, and we spend all our time, free time on the water. Last time I sailed out of Rockland, it was pea soup. Terrifying to be up on the bow listening for vessels. But anyway, it's a beautiful place, and thanks for having us. This overview presentation is going to cover four things. One is, what is ocean planning? Two is just giving you a little bit of information on the National Ocean Policy, which is a national executive order that's sort of a policy backdrop for all of this. The third is to tell you a little bit about this regional planning body you're hearing about, this group of feds, states, and tribes, and the Fishery Management Council that Kathleen mentioned, and what we've been up to and where we are and why it's so important for us to get all of your best ideas now and going forward, of course, but we're at a really critical juncture where we very much want to get our goals figured out, and so that's what these meetings are really about, is getting your input so we can move forward in that direction. And then finally, share some principles that we've come up with around the regional planning body that really reflect the national ocean policy as well, but really kind of guide the goals that you're going to see. What do we think is important context to remember as we define what we think we'd like to accomplish? Okay, so what's ocean planning? So, I mean, the ocean is a busy place. Everyone here knows that. It's in high demand. We're highly dependent on the ocean for jobs, transportation, security, food, recreation, spiritual needs, our cultural connection here in New England. In a big way. Yeah. And the third thing is, it's constantly changing. There's no one that knows that better than ocean users that are out there observing major shifts in climate, ocean acidification, these types of movement of species, all of that. Those types of changes, but our economy and our needs are changing too. So it's just a really dynamic, it's dynamic on all fronts. The issue here is, you look at these bubbles of, you know, different sort of uses or needs or things that we demand from the oceans, there's not a whole lot of coordination that goes on right now between federal agencies in terms of how we do this, how we manage these different things, the information that we need to do this well. There's not a real way to share that information. There's not a real way to have a collective research agenda on what we need to pursue. It really should be grounded in regional priorities. And there's also over 140 different laws. Really depressing to say, but there's a lot of different legislation out there right now that is just layered. I don't need to tell fishermen that. And that's often uncoordinated, and decisions are made in isolation. So we have an opportunity here to take a big step back. That's really what ocean planning is. Kathleen said it's sort of, where do we want to go? What do we want things to look like? Let's pause and just be more thoughtful about what we want to see and better connect what we know to give all of us a larger context within which to make decisions. And so, in short, ocean planning is really, it's about better and more information for better decisions. But it's also, it's not just about information, it's about the way people connect. It's about making better connections between federal agencies and federal states and the public, and a public process that really, or many different public processes that might be better connected, more transparent. So there's an opportunity here to do things a little bit differently. Okay. I just wanted to share a story about sort of what ocean planning looks like, because it's, for me, it's really hard to talk about this stuff conceptually. It helps to tell a story to see how it happens somewhere. So this is what you're seeing here is the approach to Boston Harbor. This is Stella Eigenbank. And the issue here was ship strikes with whales, with endangered right whales and other baleen whales. And a lot of ship traffic, whether it was commercial fishing, commercial shipping, whale watch vessels. So it's a busy place, right? A lot going in and out of Boston. There were also, there's some green dots up there, there are also some LNG proposed deep water port sites. that were in the mix. The big polygon is a natural marine sanctuary. All the dots you see are sightings of whales. So understanding sort of where those critters are moving. And so the issue was potential ship strikes, and that is an issue, and a lot of traffic that kind of needed to be better separated. So what happened was NOAA, the Coast Guard, marine pilots, whale experts got together and had a conversation about the issue and got a lot of pertinent information in front of them so they could see what the issue was and maybe how to resolve it that could benefit multiple parties involved. And so as a result, the Coast Guard, through their mandated regulation, shifted the traffic, the navigation lane from the dotted lane up to the hard line that you see. And as a result, it decreased the potential for whale strikes by 81%. And it had minimal impact on mariners. I think it's like 9 to 22 minutes extra, you know. And then, and so there were some win-wins there. When people got together, the information was presented, and the agency, with that mandate, did something about it. So I just wanted to share that as an example. In terms of the National Ocean Policy, so this was an executive order that was signed by Obama back in 2010, and it really, very importantly, it builds on a lot of work from other administrations. It's not just Obama's administration that came up with this. Through Bush, through Clinton, through Bush, there was a lot of sort of evolution of thought in terms of there are way too many regulations, there are a lot of agencies that aren't coordinated, there are taxpayer dollars that are being spent over here, maybe duplicating work over there. We need to figure this out. And so the National Ocean Policy created, it recognized the importance of healthy oceans, it recognized the need to do things differently in managing our coasts, oceans, and Great Lakes. And by nature, so it created a National Ocean Council that pulls together 18 or so different federal agencies, heads of agencies that are accountable for making some changes. And it created like 9 different priorities. One of them is ocean planning. And ocean planning, very importantly, is to be done regionally, not nationally. We in the region, here in New England, as Kathleen said, our geography is sort of New England, and then from sort of the beach out to 200 miles offshore. So it's a SALTI initiative, taking into account bays and estuaries, and very importantly, taking into consideration a lot of upland issues that are very importantly connected, and high seas issues that may be important depending on what we choose to focus on. So that there is a geography, there's some boundaries here. There's also some boundaries in terms of authority. It's an executive order. By definition, it doesn't create any new laws, doesn't supersede anything that exists. It's an opportunity to do a better job within our existing mandates. So that's a really important point, too. Okay, move on here. So the National Ocean Policy called for these regional planning bodies to be stood up. And, you know, here in New England, there's been a conversation. I mean, a lot of states have done some ocean planning on their own. Of note is Massachusetts and Rhode Island, and there's been some bay management efforts here in Maine. I mean, a lot of people are sort of trying this ecosystem-based approach, you know, lots of information, the right people to solve sort of a problem in place. This isn't a new concept. But this is a new opportunity in terms of getting 10 tribes, 10 federal agencies, and they're the biggies. There's Interior and NOAA and Army Corps through the Navy, Coast Guard, USDA, Agriculture, EPA, you know, all these different federal agencies, and all the New England states, including Vermont, as well as a seat for the Fishery Management Council and a seat for a Canadian and a New York rep as well, to all come together with a common mission of developing that vision, that plan, and some helpful products to commit to working together to find ways within our existing mandates to do things differently. And that's really the charge of this group. We've laid out a 3-year timeline, and you'll note it's within this administration. And it's also within the appetite of people to really complete things in 3 years. It's important. These big initiatives need a beginning, a middle, and an end. Really importantly about this graphic is really that we're in phase one. We're sitting here with you now as we're identifying the issues and the goals we want to focus on. And then we're going to go into phase two and three, and the whole thing is really one big public process. As Ona mentioned, a lot of different opportunities to engage and participate actively, and we hope that you will. So we're looking to have something really meaningful produced by 2015, and then it doesn't stop there. Then you implement it, right? Hopefully you start implementing it while you're doing it in terms of little things that can be tweaked, conversations, you know, new relationships, coordination between agencies, tools like the portal, that the regional data portal that you'll hear about in a minute, that can start to be used by people needing better context to make their decisions. So we want to try to change behavior here. And it doesn't just start when a plan drops on someone's desk. You need to involve the right people as you move forward. So last, I just want to finish with a couple of slides around the principles that this regional planning body sort of came up with. Again, merging of cultures here, tribes, states, feds, a lot of public comment, trying to get our heads around sort of what should be the backdrop, what should be in our minds as we figure out our way forward. The first is, as I've been saying, better data and information. There are a lot of things we don't know. There's a need to get better access to information that exists that isn't public, that isn't shared. There's a lot of traditional knowledge, but tribes, ocean users, citizens, etc. And we need a better understanding to make better decisions by pulling that all together. It creates a larger context. There's a lot of dissatisfaction with the way things are done right now, some ideas maybe about how things could be improved with some efficiencies and transparency in decision making. We want, again, the outcomes, given that this is an executive order, we need to be sort of digging within our existing authorities and regulations, but still be creative, be bold. That shouldn't slam a door shut. There's a lot of wiggle room, and we need to start identifying how things should be improved. This is just an acknowledgement that, as I said in the beginning, things are dynamic, this is adaptive, everything is shifting from fish species to our priorities to economic constraints, and that is an important backdrop. This is really coming quite a bit from, well, again, ocean users and also tribes. Historic, cultural, and spiritual importance of the ocean should not be lost here. It's not just about what we extract and how we use it. It's about our connection to it and our culture. This next principle is really about connecting this effort inland to watersheds and also to coastal communities, to real people in real places, so that when we're mapping activities, we understand that those activities have a working waterfront associated with them. That is important, and we need to understand the sort of the footprint of a community on the ocean. We're all concerned about this changing ocean health and how to manage in the face of change, and what we need to better understand what ocean uses are going on out there, which ones are emerging, and which existing ones, traditional uses that are really important, that are shifting, that are changing. And finally, that this is a public resource. This is a public domain that we need to remember that we are stewards and caretakers of that role as well. So that rounds out the principles, and I think we'll get back to you.